Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Confrontation Clause Edition. Today our featured guest is University of Richmond School of Law Dean John Douglas, discussing Melendez-Diaz v. Massachusetts, heard an oral argument on Monday, November 10th. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the limits of the Confrontation Clause in the wake of its decision in Crawford v. Washington. The case arises from the conviction of Luis Melendez-Diaz on charges of distributing and trafficking crack cocaine. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts submitted as evidence at trial lab reports that showed substances seized at the time of Melendez-Diaz's arrest to be cocaine. Under Massachusetts precedent, such reports were considered a record of primary fact, and in the wake of the Supreme Court's 2004 decision in Crawford, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts had held in Commonwealth v. Verde that a crime lab report was analogous to a business record and thus would not implicate the Confrontation Clause. In this case, the Intermediate Appellate Court in Massachusetts applied this logic to reject Melendez-Diaz's challenge, and the Supreme Judicial Court denied review. The Supreme Court now considers whether crime lab reports constitute the kind of testimonial evidence which implicates the Sixth Amendment's protection of the accused's right, quote, to be confronted with the witnesses against him. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Dean Douglas.
Melendez-Diaz is a case that's remarkable because it is at the same time a routine case and a cutting-edge case. It's routine in the sense that it presents an issue that comes up probably hundreds of times a day in the criminal justice system here in the United States, in virtually every state, and in the federal system. But it's cutting-edge because it presents a constitutional issue under the Confrontation Clause of the Sixth Amendment that is still in the process of development. This is a case that follows on from the seminal case of Crawford versus Washington, which was decided in 2004 and set a new standard for analysis under the Confrontation Clause. Let me start by giving you the very brief facts. The facts are quite routine. Luis Melendez-Diaz was arrested, charged with distribution of cocaine. At the time of his arrest, police seized a number of bags of white powder. They then sent the bags to the Massachusetts Department of Health Forensic Laboratory with a request that the powder be analyzed. In the normal course of events, a laboratory technician tested the material and determined it to be cocaine. After the tests, the lab technician drafted a certificate pursuant to Massachusetts law, stating that the material was cocaine and providing some other details about it. He then signed the certificate and did so under oath, which is required by Massachusetts law. And under that law, when a lab technician provides a certificate like that under oath, Massachusetts law provides that it is admissible at trial without requiring the presence or testimony of the laboratory technician. In other words, a state's proof that the white material is cocaine, in effect, is provided through a document which is simply mailed to the prosecutor and presented in evidence at trial. And that's exactly what happened in Luis Diaz's case. Now, there are two important factors to note that result from this really quite typical scenario. First, of course, is that this happens hundreds of times a day all across the United States. It is a very routine practice, certainly in drug cases, and it's not at all unusual in, for example, drunk driving cases where blood might be analyzed to determine blood alcohol content. And the Massachusetts statute is not unique in the United States. In fact, it's quite typical of statutes that exist in most states allowing for laboratory analysis results to be certified and presented in evidence in documentary form. The other critical factor here, of course, is that there is no cross-examination of the laboratory technician under this formula. The material is presented simply as a written certificate, and the laboratory technician never shows up at trial. The absence of that live testimony and cross-examination is what gives us an issue under the Sixth Amendment. The Sixth Amendment, I like to think of as a blueprint for the American criminal trial. The amendment begins with the language, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right." And then the rest of the amendment lists the various rights that are part and parcel of our criminal trials. It includes the right to be represented by counsel, the right to trial by jury, the right to a speedy and public trial, the right to compulsory process, that is, to subpoena witnesses on behalf of the defense, and, most important for our purposes today, the accused has the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him under the Confrontation Clause of the Sixth Amendment. When cases go to trial, that right quite clearly includes the right of the defendant to be present, to see and to hear the prosecution's witnesses, and, perhaps most importantly, to cross-examine those witnesses. The right of confrontation, the right to see, hear, and cross-examine the prosecution's witnesses, can be at odds with the prosecution's use of hearsay, because unless the declarant testifies at the trial, there is, obviously, no cross-examination. And that conflict, the conflict between hearsay and confrontation, has been a difficult problem for the court for many years. For the 24 years between 1980 and 2004, the Supreme Court resolved that conflict, in essence, by creating exceptions to the right of confrontation. The exceptions were based on the reliability of the hearsay, and the court assessed the reliability of hearsay by looking to traditional exceptions to the hearsay rule. The result of that approach, an approach that the Supreme Court gave us in the 1980 case of Ohio versus Roberts, the result of that approach was in effect to merge the hearsay doctrine under the rules of evidence with the constitutional doctrine of confrontation. In other words, if hearsay met the requirements of a traditional hearsay exception under the rules and the law of evidence, it was also admissible under the Confrontation Clause. Well, that approach to confrontation, in effect, made the confrontation right disappear. It was displaced pretty much totally by the law of evidence. That was the case up until 2004, when the Supreme Court decided the case Crawford v. Washington, which changed the approach to hearsay under the Confrontation Clause. In an opinion written by Justice Scalia, the court looked closely at the language of the Sixth Amendment. The key language here for Justice Scalia is the line, witnesses against. From that language, the court concluded, the Confrontation Clause does not apply to all forms of hearsay, but only that hearsay which amounts to witnessing against an accused. And a witness against an accused is someone who, in effect, provides testimony. The court went on to look at that language in the historical context at the time of the ratification of the Sixth Amendment. And in the court's view, that history suggested that the, quote, principal evil, close quote, that the clause was intended to address was a mode of trial, which the court identified as the civil mode, which essentially involved agents of the crown, that is, government agents, going out and procuring testimony from a witness and then presenting that testimony in a courtroom in the form of an affidavit or written statement. And in the Crawford case, the court gave as an example of that civil mode of procuring testimony the infamous trial in 1603 of Sir Walter Raleigh, who was tried for treason and whose trial was based in part on written statements made by Lord Cobham, a witness against him, under circumstances where Cobham was essentially in custody of the Crown's agents, provided the statement, which was then brought into court against Raleigh, without any testimony from Cobham himself. That kind of process, allowing a government agent to procure testimony in secondhand form and then bring it into court through hearsay testimony or through a hearsay writing, that civil mode of procuring witnesses against an accused, the court said in Crawford, was the principal evil against which the Confrontation Clause of the Sixth Amendment was aimed. As a result, in Crawford, the court said, the kind of hearsay that the clause prohibits is testimonial hearsay. Hearsay that sounds and feels and tastes like witnessing against an accused. Conversely, the court in Crawford said, the Sixth Amendment does not apply to other types of hearsay. Hearsay that does not amount to the procuring by government agents of testimony against an accused. For example, the court suggested in dictum in Crawford, a business record would not meet that definition and would not be within the protection of the Confrontation Clause. Hearsay presented through business records, then the court suggested, would be admissible even over a Confrontation Clause objection. A few years later, in the combined cases of Davis v. Washington and Hammond v. Indiana, the Supreme Court refined that test a little bit and suggested that hearsay is testimonial, where the principal purpose of an interrogation is to investigate past events for purposes of prosecution. Ever since Crawford v. Washington, the use by prosecutors of laboratory analysis certificates without testimony by laboratory technicians has been a hot issue. It has been decided in virtually every state in the United States, and the courts have split. Roughly half of the courts have used a business record analysis and have suggested that laboratory certificates essentially are routine business records of a public agency and are not testimonial hearsay, therefore may be admitted in evidence without cross-examination of the laboratory technician, without violating the Confrontation Clause. On the other hand, roughly half of the courts that have reviewed the issue have said that these types of certificates are the equivalent of affidavits produced at the request of a government agent, that is the police, typically by a government agent, that is a laboratory technician in a state forensic lab, and produced for the purpose of criminal prosecution. Hence, many courts have found they are at the core of testimonial hearsay as defined by Crawford. That conflict has finally made its way to the United States Supreme Court in the form of Melendez-Diaz versus Massachusetts. The defense in that case argues, as we might expect, that the certificates of the laboratory technicians are a form of formal testimony. After all, they are signed, they are sworn to, they are the functional equivalent of an affidavit, and they are produced by an agent of the state for purposes of criminal prosecution at the request of police. Defense argues, then, that they are at the core of the kind of testimonial hearsay that the court identified in Crawford v. Washington. On the other side, Commonwealth of Massachusetts argues that laboratory certificates are more analogous to business records, and in fact that business records, including records produced by public agents as required by law, were a recognized exception to the hearsay rule at common law and hence would have been understood by the framers to be an exception to the confrontation right. In addition to the business record argument, Commonwealth of Massachusetts argues further that the conclusions in the laboratory certificates are not accusations of crime that amount to anyone witnessing against an accused under the language of the Confrontation Clause, but are instead an analysis of neutral, objective, scientific fact. In his responsive brief, the defendant argues that the laboratory certificates don't match up with the kind of business record that would have been admissible at common law because, in fact, they are produced in anticipation of litigation. That is, they're produced at the request of police explicitly for the purpose of use at trial. Second, the defendant responds, it really is irrelevant whether the statement in the certificate is directly accusatory or not. It is circumstantial evidence of guilt, and it goes to prove an element of the crime charged against the defendant. And the Confrontation Clause, the defendant argued, has never been limited to evidence that is directly accusatory, but certainly encompasses evidence that is circumstantial. For example, a witness from the scene of a crime might testify that he saw a blue car speeding away and a man with blonde hair in the car meeting the description of the defendant. While that kind of statement may not be directly accusatory, it is exactly the kind of statement that requires cross-examination. The idea that the prosecution could obtain that statement in the form of an affidavit and present it at trial is inconsistent with the confrontation right. Finally, the defense takes issue with the notion that the confrontation right is satisfied where the statement is one of neutral, objective, scientific fact. For one thing, the defense says that's again irrelevant under the Confrontation Clause. For another, who's to say that a laboratory technician employed by the state and providing information at the request of a police officer is neutral? And finally, the defense points out, there are enough concerns and cases involving inaccuracies in laboratory analysis that it's simply incorrect to assume that we are dealing with neutral, objective, unassailable fact. At the end of the day, the defense argues, this kind of evidence needs to be and ought to be subject to cross-examination, just like any other evidence. The argument was vigorous from both sides. When counsel for the defendant was arguing, the court had a number of questions, mostly related to the practical impact on the administration of justice that we might see from a ruling requiring the presence of laboratory technicians every time the state attempts to prove the contents of a bag of white powder or green leafy substance or the many other substances that are subject to scientific testing and offered in evidence at trials all around the country dozens and dozens of times every day. Counsel responded by pointing out that a number of states do not have hearsay exceptions for these types of laboratory analyses and in fact seem to get by quite well. He suggested that in most cases, defense counsel would not see a reason to challenge this type of evidence, would be likely to stipulate to its admissibility and thereby avoid having to bring a lab technician to testify. And in addition, counsel suggested many states have statutes that require the defense, at a minimum, to put the prosecutor on notice sometime before trial that he chooses to challenge the testimony of the laboratory technician and to do so in a way that allows prosecutor time to get the laboratory technician to court. The court's questioning of counsel for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts was, I would say, even more vigorous. It's not always easy to predict the outcome of a Supreme Court decision based on questions at oral argument, but my own view is that the tide seemed to be pretty significantly against the Commonwealth of Massachusetts during argument. Justice Scalia, who was the author of Crawford and of the principal confrontation cases since, was quite active in questioning counsel for Massachusetts. Justice Scalia challenged counsel to distinguish the certificates provided by laboratory technicians from affidavits used for other purposes. The tone of the questioning, at least, suggests a sense that these certificates really are analogous to affidavits and are at the core of the definition of testimonial hearsay that Justice Scalia set out in Crawford. In addition, the court seemed unconvinced that the types of business records that might have been admissible under the common law shopbook rule were anything like laboratory certificates that are prepared by government officials in anticipation of trial. If I were to make a prediction, I have to say that the government's going to lose this case, that the Supreme Court is going to find the laboratory analysis certificates are in fact the equivalent of affidavits procured by government agents, from government agents for use in prosecution, that they are testimonial and therefore are excluded under the Confrontation Clause unless the declarant, that is the laboratory technician, is available for cross-examination. If the court were to rule that way, it would set up the next important Confrontation Clause case that we're likely to see come through the court, and that case would address what we might call notice and demand procedures that exist in a number of states. The statutes vary from state to state, but their principal purpose is to require the defendant to take some kind of pretrial action so that when the case comes to trial, if the laboratory technician is not present to testify, the case isn't lost to the prosecution. In many states, the notice and demand provisions simply require the prosecution to give notice to the defendant that they will use a certificate of a laboratory technician and then require the defendant to state an objection at some point before trial so the prosecutor can then bring in the laboratory technician to testify. That procedure is unlikely to concern the court from a confrontation perspective. But a number of states have notice and demand statutes that are different. Under those different notice and demand statutes, prosecutors put defendants on notice of their intention to use laboratory certificates. And then the defendant is given the right and also bears the burden of subpoenaing the lab technician, putting him on the witness stand, and examining him as a hostile witness. That second type of notice and demand statute is likely to give rise to significant concerns under both the Due Process Clause and the Confrontation Clause. The reason is it's a procedure which essentially puts on the defendant the burden in the first instance of calling a witness and of cross-examining a witness who has never appeared in person before the jury to present a direct examination. Cases under that kind of statute, I suspect, will give the court pause. But then again, that's a case for another day. For today, we've had Melendez-Diaz versus Massachusetts, a case presenting a very routine problem of admissibility of laboratory analysis certificates, but one that gives rise to a very cutting-edge question under the Confrontation Clause. We should know, perhaps by summer, how the court comes out on the issue. Thank you. Once again, this is John Douglas at the University of Richmond School of Law, and it's been my pleasure to talk to you all about Melendez-Diaz versus Massachusetts. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.